Thinking with this story of how people react to losing someone that they love, it was inspired by seeing someone who had lost their wife apologizing to the funeral directors for keeping them waiting. When your mother dies. When your mother dies, it should be announced on the 10 o'clock news. The town where she has lived for more than 40 years should miss a beat. But when she dies, it's a blank Wednesday with a light, grisly rain. Outside, commuters, children, and pensioners come and go like breaths. When your mother dies, your father meets you at the door, thinking you already know. "Wasn't it sudden, Sean?" he says. He's always been like this. Your mother said he would ambush her with news, usually bad, when she came in from shopping. "He won't even let you get your coat off before he starts giving out," she used to say. When your mother dies, no one knows what to do. Your sisters cry like their tears will never stop. One brother feels tears in his eyes and leaves the room. Another hunts in old albums for photos of the two of them together, which he collects in little heaps. When she dies, you gather in a room and kneel while a priest tells you what your mother was like. A sickness gnaws at the center of your stomach. She lies, a statue of your mother, on the pink flowered bedspread, on the bed which someone has made. One sister scolds her gently, "Oh, Mum," in a mouthful of tears. Another kisses her forehead and says she's cold, but you don't touch her. You are afraid of the yellowness of her skin. 3 days before, you sat next to her on the edge of this same bed, with your arm curled around her, barely touching, a gesture she might not have allowed had she been stronger. "I love you, Sean," she said, the first time you remember her saying this. Then she added, in strict chronological order, "and Joan, and Mary, and Paul, and Margaret, and Philip," and fell against you in affection or fatigue. Then she was paper, now she has turned to stone. The priest asks you all to say the rosary. You remember how they made you do this when you were children, in front of the picture of the Sacred Heart in the tiny living room between the settee and the two armchairs. Your mother used to say, "The family that prays together stays together," but you can't remember the sound of her saying it. When your mother dies, the funeral directors arrive, and your father apologizes for keeping them waiting. The four of them remain in the hall, their heads bowing slightly and briefly every time a member of the family passes. Outside, a car horn sounds. The hearse is blocking the road. A woman shouts, "It ain't my fucking fault. I've still got a business to run." One of your uncles, Niall, goes to talk to the men in the hall. "She was a lovely woman. She was my sister, you know." He's always loved to be at the center of things. He has a word for everyone who passes in and out of your mother's room. They want to make the most of their last minutes with her, but don't know what to say or do. Your father comes out and says, "Whenever you're ready now, thank you. Thank you very much." And Niall says, "I'll leave you boys to it." When your mother dies, someone makes a show of themselves at the wake by carrying on like it was their wife who's died. There's a free bar to a limit which quickly runs out. Cousins are caught between grief and reunion. "These days, we only meet at funerals," one tells you. People you've seen in the street all your life and never spoken to line up to shake your hand and say, "Sorry for your trouble, sorry for your trouble, sorry." When you were younger, you used to imagine what it would be like if one of your parents died. You imagine being brave. You go back to the house with your father, the last to arrive. There are voices from the living room and his face floods with anger. In his eyes, there's a wild look that you know too well. "Did you invite that crowd?" He marches round the back of the house toward the garden. In the living room, your two aunts and uncles are on the easy chairs. Your brothers and sisters have brought in wooden chairs from the kitchen for themselves. Conversation stops when you walk in. "Everything all right?" says Uncle Niall. "Where's your father?" says his wife, Aunt Kathleen. As she speaks, you see him appear from around the side of the house and go to the washing line. You all turn and watch him through the big, deep bay window. "I suppose he wants to bring them in while there's a chance," says Uncle John, who always gives people the benefit of the doubt. You all watch your father move along the line of washing toward one of your mother's skirts. He was always a hard worker, your father, says John. It'll help to keep him busy. That's right, says his wife, Helen. Even so, says Aunt Kathleen, wouldn't you think today, anyway, he might be a bit more natural? He makes an art out of unpegging the clothes. His big hands reach up, and while his left rests on the line, the other releases the pressure from a peg as delicately as if he were picking strawberries. You watch him put a shirt, a pair of sheets, or socks into a basket. Gingerly, he touches your mother's skirt and leaves it sobbing on the line. When your mother dies, you and your brothers and sisters go out into the kitchen to boil the kettle, get out the best cups and saucers, and put out ham sandwiches, tomatoes, and sponge cake onto plates. But it's only an hour since you've eaten. Through the serving hatch, you hear Aunt Kathleen. Isn't he fierce odd? Your father. Your sisters hand round sandwiches, which are accepted with reluctance. Oh, you're too good. I couldn't eat another thing. You take your father out tea. The damp grass licks at the hem of his trousers. He takes the cup and asks, are they still in there, as if hours have already passed? He is facing away toward the neighbour's garden. Is he coming in? Says Aunt Kathleen. You make an excuse, and she says, well, I don't mind, but isn't it unnatural? And laughs quickly. It'll be hard for him now anyway, says John, resting his cup and saucer awkwardly on his knee and looking out into the garden for confirmation. What'll he do? It'll be hard on all of them, says Aunt Kathleen. The afternoon drags on. They ask you about jobs that you haven't had for years, a girl that you used to know, and whether there's any sign of children. There are stories of how you came home from college once with bags full of damp washing, and your mother feared you would catch your death of cold. Aunt Kathleen says, you'll have to look after yourselves now, though half of you are already married. You are aware all the time of your father outside. Not once does he glance into the living room, though he is just a few paces away. There's cake, more tea, any excuse for movement, and a fuss over the smallest thing. Everyone offers to help. Outside, a neighbour comes up and stops to talk to your father and shake his hand. You go out to him again with cake. He says, will they ever leave us in peace? Who invited them? That's what I want to know. When you don't answer, he says, it'll be the last time anyway. Your uncles and aunts are the first to go. They leave in a flurry, glad to be busy at last. There's a panic over coats. Someone has to go to the loo at the last minute, and there's a lot of looking at watches. You all know they have plenty of time. Look after yourselves, says Aunt Kathleen, glancing out into the garden. John says, tell your father I'll be in to see him. Uncle Niall shakes you all by the hand in turn. After they've gone, you open the side window into the garden. Your sisters' husbands, who have been waiting in the pub, come back to collect them. The sisters go out into the garden together. The eldest, his favourite, goes out to him first. Take care of yourself, Dad. I'll come round next week. The second, never so confident of his affection, says, the Mastersons said they'll be in to see you next week. They needn't bother, he says. And she knows she said the wrong thing again. The youngest, the most confident and the most like him, hugs him and they leave. Your brothers go out then. They stand a distance from him, do not hug him and do not shake his hand. Over the next few weeks, neighbours, your mother's friends, will come in to see your father in the afternoons. They'll arrive with offerings of cake or bread and won't stay long. The only conversation will be your mother. They will mean to come again. Instead, they'll stop and speak to him when they see him in the street. When your mother dies, the house empties eventually. When it's quiet again, you go up to your room. Later, your father comes inside, and you hear the sound of him downstairs, shuffling from room to room, checking they're gone. His footsteps end in the living room. You imagine him sitting in the armchair where he has always sat. The TV will stay turned off because he's never learned to work the remote. The plate of unfinished sandwiches and cake will still be on the table. You think of going down, but you turn the radio on in your room, quietly, under the duvet, so he won't hear.